to what he had to say.
When it comes to the eastern part of Gaza City, the Israeli warplanes carried out an air raid targeting a residential building in the Nafaq area in the Daraj neighborhood, killing three Palestinian civilians. Meanwhile, the Israeli artillery shelling was continued heavily against Azeitun neighborhood in the southern part of Gaza City. And as you know, the current situation in the northern part of Gaza Strip is still beyond catastrophic. But the Palestinian people are stranded in those areas. They are still trapped under the heavy bombardments of the Israeli air raids and the artillery shelling maintained heavily and brutally against different parts of the northern section of Gaza Strip. And those Israeli occupation forces on the ground continue to detonate and destroy more residential buildings and squares in the western part of Beit Lahia City. And as you know, the Israeli attacks are still intensified also against Beit Hanun City, which is still facing another ground offensive targeting that city after the Israeli occupation forces finished. Beit Lahia City and Kamal Adwan Hospital, they now turn to Beit Hanun City. Several brutal air raids were carried out and, as you know, took place targeting different parts of Beit Hanun City. And let me say that thousands of the Palestinian people are still believed trapped in different parts of the northern section of Gaza Strip that are still exposed to the ongoing Israeli air raids and attacks. And on the ground, they are still suffering from the deprivation of any humanitarian essentials they need in order to survive the unbearable humanitarian situation here in Gaza Strip.
The Israeli military has once again attacked a Baptist hospital in Gaza as the regime continues strikes on health facilities in the besieged strip. The top floor of the healthcare facility was hit by artillery shelling. The hospital is located in Zaytun neighborhood of the northern Gaza city. It has been repeatedly besieged and attacked by Israeli ground and air forces. The hospital has been reporting a dramatic surge in admissions and a critical shortage of supplies amid escalating Israeli violence in Gaza City and Jabalia. The shelling of the Baptist Hospital comes shortly after Israeli forces stormed, set ablaze and closed Kamal Adwan Hospital, the last major functioning health facility in northern Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called for the immediate deployment of UN observers in Gaza hospitals to counter Israeli claims that such facilities have military use. In a statement, Hamas condemned the systematic destruction of medical facilities, in particular the recent burning of Kamal Adwan Hospital. The resistance group slammed the Israeli military of conducting a war of extermination and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. It urged the UN and international bodies to intervene and protect the remaining healthcare facilities while ensuring that they receive necessary medical supplies. Hamas held the UN and the global community historically responsible for failing to end the ongoing crisis in northern parts of the war-ravaged strip. In an extraordinary new tragedy for the people in the Gaza Strip, four babies have died in Khan Yunis due to the cold weather over the past week. The Gaza Ministry of Health says more people are likely to freeze to death if the crisis and the lack of fuel continues. Our correspondent Ahmed Najjar reports from Khan Yunis.
This worn-out tent is the makeshift shelter of Sila Al-Fasih's family. It was home to a Palestinian baby girl who died inside it last Wednesday in Khan Yunis because her heart stopped due to the frigid temperatures. After her birth, she began her life in this tent for the displaced, which, like her fragile body, is barely withstanding the harsh weather.
We live in this worn-out tent with no proper clothes, mattresses, or blankets. After months of suffering, my wife gave birth to Sila. We couldn't provide her with the necessary clothing or warm supplies as we were displaced from Gaza City and lost everything. Last Wednesday, we woke up to find her like a piece of ice and her color was blue. I quickly took her to the UK Medfield Hospital. But the doctors told me that she had frozen to death as her heart stopped due to the shivering temperatures.
The Ministry of Health announced that at least four newborn babies lost their lives in makeshift camps due to freezing temperatures, a lack of essential means of warmth, and the severe conditions of these shelters. They further warned that more children could perish should this deprivation persist.
Unfortunately, the four cases that you mentioned, they were below 1 month of old. All of them were in the tents in the near the seashore. all of them, they were extremely hypothermic. They were arrested at the tent and came to the hospital. In fact, we see, unfortunately, 5 to 6 cases every day, but they are reaching the reception room alive, and we are dealing with them. We are doing the resuscitation for them. But these 4 cases that you mentioned, they were already died at the tent and came to the hospital. This is due to hypothermia, as we mentioned. You know, this unit is unable to move, unable to produce energy.
In Gaza, children are born and die without ever experiencing warmth or safety. Their short lives are overshadowed by the suffering caused by the Israel's genocidal policies, which ultimately claim their lives through bombs, starvation, or the cold grip of death. Ahmad al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Iranians take to the streets across the country to mark the anniversary of nationwide rallies that ended the post-election riots of 2009. Rallies have already been held in several Iranian cities and more are expected to take place in the coming hours. The centerpiece is a demonstration that is planned in the capital Tehran in the evening. Iranians marched on the streets in December 2009 to show their support for the government and to denounce the month-long riots that followed the presidential election of that year. The rallies put an end to what came to be known as the 2009 sedition. Meanwhile, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps issued a statement on the occasion. The forces said the 2009 incidents were a plot by the West against Iran. The IRGC once again reiterated its readiness to counter enemies' plots to create insecurity in the country. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps has dismantled several terrorist cells in the southeastern province of Sistan and Balochistan. The commander of the IRGC Special Forces says the terror cells were disbanded as part of drills against a separatist grouping that styles itself as Jaish al-Adl. Brigadier General Mohammad Husseini says the IRGC also launched operations against the safe houses of the terror grouping deep inside the Iranian territory. The general says the operations dealt a structural blow to the group that has been behind a series of terrorist attacks against Iranian security forces in the southeast over the past years. A South Korean passenger plane with 181 people on board crashed during landing in the country's south. The plane was attempting a belly landing at Muan International Airport in the south of the country when it caught fire, leaving all but 2 dead. According to fire officials, the process of recovering and locating the remains is time-taking, as the plane is almost completely destroyed. The cause of the accident is presumed to be a bird strike combined with adverse weather conditions. However, the exact cause is expected to be announced after a thorough investigation. North Korea says it will launch its toughest ever strategy to counter the United States. That is according to an official media report on a key year-end party meeting overseen by leader Kim Jong-un. The report said the U.S. is the most reactionary state that regards anti-communism as its invariable state policy. It slammed growing ties between South Korea, the U.S. and Japan, saying the alliance had expanded into a nuclear military bloc for aggression. Tensions are running high on the Korean Peninsula. North Korea sees joint U.S. military drills with the South and Japan as rehearsals for invasion. The occupied West Bank has experienced a night of violence following incursions by the Israeli forces into various towns and cities. Israeli settlers also launched attacks in Ramallah targeting Palestinian civilians. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent Nakah Hamad from Ramallah for more details.
Until this moment, local sources are talking about the clashes that are happening inside Nablus city and the surrounding villages of Nablus, like we just mentioned, like Rajib and Kufr Qalleen. The situation, the tension in Nablus and in the northern cities of the West Bank continues to accumulate as we are of course talking about Jenin, Tul Kerem, Nablus, and the area of Tubas and the northern valleys. The tension over there is rising. many incursions have been reported to areas like Yabad and areas surrounding Tulkarem refugee camp and Tulkarem city. The settlers have attacked Palestinians working in their fields since the hours of the morning and until this moment. We are talking about on and off attacks that is happening to Palestinians in the area of Sinwad, which has witnessed several clashes, and as it is very close to Al-Fra settlement. Another unfortunate headline over here that we feel very heavy-hearted to be broadcasting is the killing of our colleague Shada al-Sabbagh inside Jenin refugee camp by Shada's family have announced by PA fire inside Jenin refugee camp.
The Palestinian resistance group Hamas has called on Muslim worshippers to increase their presence at Al-Aqsa Mosque to protect it against its Judaization planned by the Israeli regime. Hamas has said Israel is trying to strengthen its settlement activities in the occupied Al-Quds city, Judaize it, and completely control the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance group underlined that Palestinians will do their utmost to thwart the Israeli plot. Hamas's call followed another desecration of the Holy Mosque by the Israeli far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir on Thursday. It was Ben-Gvir's fifth visit to the compound since 2022. Based on an agreement signed between the Israeli regime and Jordan, non-Muslim prayer at the Al-Aqsa Mosque is banned. Settlers in the Israeli-occupied territories have once again taken to the streets calling for an immediate Gaza ceasefire deal and the return of the captives held there. The demonstrators in Tel Aviv protested against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet and its handling of the conflict in Gaza. The regime's police scuffled with the protesters, especially in Al-Quds, pushing some people to the ground. These weekly protests have been ongoing for a year now, with demonstrators accusing Netanyahu of deliberately avoiding a deal and prolonging the war on Gaza so that he could remain in power. Over 100 captives are still held in Gaza, and around half of them are believed to be still alive. The U.S. military has reportedly transferred new military equipment from Iraq to its bases in northern Syria. Reports say a convoy of 50 trucks loaded with armored vehicles, military equipment, and logistical supplies have been transferred to the Arab country. The convoy has entered northeastern province of Al-Hasaka from Iraq's Kurdistan region. It came days after the transfer of military equipment to a U.S. military base in the same province. The Pentagon has also confirmed that the U.S. has doubled its forces in the country. Washington began sending troops to Syria in 2014 under pretext of fighting Daesh terrorists. The U.S. has mainly deployed forces near oil fields in the country, claiming to protect it from falling into the hands of militants. The Yemeni army says they've brought down an American MQ-9 surveillance drone spying on the country. Let's listen to a statement by the spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces.
The air defenses of the Yemeni armed forces shot down an American MQ-9 aircraft while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Baitha Governorate. The aircraft was shot down with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the 13th time that our air defenses were able to shoot down during the Battle of the Promised Conquest and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed their continuation in confronting all attempts by the enemies to undermine the sovereignty of our country and that they are continuing their operations in support of Gaza and that these operations will not stop until the aggression on Gaza stops and the siege is lifted.
And that is our for this hour's news. Thank you so much. Stay with us for more.
with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners' Special Program on this beautiful Sunday, December 29th, 2024. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners' Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners' Special Program is your program. It's your views that are important. And as the clock ticks toward 2025, the new year brings a renewed sense of hope, joy, and connection. May this new year peace prevails all over the world. Let's welcome the new year with gratitude and dreams of peace for the world people, especially for the people of Gaza. Welcome back. This is Listeners' Special Program, and here we've received reception reports as well as emails from around the world. This time, we've received reception reports and email from Mohammad Khaku from the United States and also from Malik Alabochai from Pakistan. Both of them are old and regular listeners. Thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, the Armenian community in the city of Isfahan in central Iran celebrate the New Year attending Wang Church in Julfa district of the city. Wang Church is a historic building in the city of Isfahan, and the Armenian community gather at the church to celebrate the New Year as the clock chimes at midnight on Tuesday night. Wang Cathedral, the largest and most beautiful cathedral in Isfahan's Julfa, one of the historical Armenian cathedrals, was established in the Shah Abbas II era in the lands of Zeresh Garden in 1605. It was extended continuously during 50 years and finally reached to the current form. The plan of the cathedral is rectangular and its direction is eastern-western. The interior of cathedral presents a sample of Armenian architecture, and its exterior facade has been designed by use of Iranian architecture, and it is a professional combination of two architectural styles. Well, we will talk about the one church in the city of Isfahan in central Iran later during the program. But for the time being, let's see what Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. has said. Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. is one of our old and regular listeners who says, "Sad reality of the genocide by the occupying regime of the Holy Land. Christmas messages from churches in Holy Land, our hearts still ache for Gaza. As we approach holy season of Christmas, reflecting on the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem, who brought a message of peace, it's disheartening to see that the Palestine remains without justice and peace. The birth of Jesus, a time for happiness, joy, and family gatherings, far removed from the daily suffering in Palestine, where genocide by the occupying regime continues while the world remains silent and unresponsive. While the world celebrates the festivities, Palestinians endure the destruction of homes, schools, mosques, churches, and infrastructure. It is heartbreaking to witness this ongoing suffering. We are angry. We are broken. This should have been a time of joy. Instead, we are mourning. We are fearful." Dr. Isaac, who condemned the using theology to justify the Zionist regime's killing of innocent civilians, said, "If Jesus were to be born today, he would be born under the rubble in Gaza." He said, "If we as Christians are not outraged by genocide, by the weaponization of the Bible to justify it, there is something wrong with our Christian witness, and we are compromising the credibility of our gospel message. We look at the Holy Family and see them in every family displaced and wandering, now homeless in despair. This is Christmas today in Palestine. This is our message to the world today. It is a gospel message. It is a true and authentic Christmas message about the God who did not stay silent, but set this world, and his word was Jesus, born among the occupied and marginalized. He is in solidarity with us in our pain and brokenness. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I wish you a joyful holiday season and a Happy New Year." First of all, salam and warm greetings to Mohammad Khaku from the United States. Thank you very much for writing to us, writing about the New Year message and the reality that is happening in the Gaza Strip and, of course, in Palestine, in occupied Palestine, about the genocide by the Zionist regime in the Gaza Strip and the pain that the freedom-seeking people of the world are feeling in their hearts about the oppressed people of Palestine and the oppressed people of Gaza. Many thanks, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, and we wish you all the best. So we were talking about the Vang Church in the city of Isfahan in central Iran. The materials used in the building of Vang were brick and adobe, and all the interior angles of cathedral covered by plaster and decorated by oil paint and gold in Iranian style, and some images from Jesus, peace be upon him, affected by Italian painting. Belfry, in front of the main entrance of the cathedral, has been constructed in Iranian style in the Shah Sultan Hussein era. This cathedral includes a dome, tall walls, and high and beautiful roofs that is the Armenian vicarage of Iran and India. There are the graves of Khachatur, the father of publishing industry, and David, bishop, in the yard of the cathedral. Museum, library, and offices are the surrounding buildings of Vank Cathedral in Isfahan. Welcome back. Malik Alabachai from Pakistan, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. He says, Dear IRIB English Radio, Radio Tehran's English language program broadcast by the Islamic Republic of Iran has consistently captivated listeners worldwide with its fantastic and delightful content. The station stands out for its rich blend of news, cultural insights, music, and discussions that reflect Iran's diverse heritage and global perspectives. Each episode provides a deep dive into topics ranging from history and arts to the largest and latest international developments, making it a treasure trove of knowledge and entertainment for audiences. Listeners are particularly drawn to the warm and engaging tone of the presenters, whose articulate delivery creates a welcoming atmosphere. Their thoughtful approach to current affairs, paired with unique segments on Iranian traditions and customs, makes the program not only informative, but also culturally enriching. The integration of melodious Persian music adds an artistic touch, allowing audiences to experience Iran's artistic legacy from the comfort of their homes. As 2025 approaches, IRIB English Radio extends its heartfelt New Year wishes to its loyal listeners around the globe. With a spirit of unity and hope, the station conveys greetings for peace, prosperity, and happiness in the coming year. The host express gratitude for the unwavering support of their audience, emphasizing the importance of staying connected through the airwaves. The new year is also a time for IRIB English Radio to renew its commitment to providing high-quality programming. The station aims to continue being a bridge of understanding and friendship between Iran and the international community, whether through special broadcasts celebrating Nowruz, the Persian New Year, or interviews with inspiring figures. IRIB English Radio promises to keep its listeners engaged and informed. In this season of joy and renewal, let us join IRIB English Radio in spreading the message of love, harmony, and goodwill as we welcome 2025 together. Warmly regards, Malik Alabachaya. Well, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to Malik Alabachaya from Pakistan. Malik Alabachaya is one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Malik Alabachaya, your description of IRIB English Radio program was great. Thank you. Thank you very much for your support. Thank you for your compliments. Well, we also wish you a great 2025, full of joy, happiness, and good tidings and love. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. New Year's Eve celebrations are underway across the globe as 2025 begins. People around the world celebrate New Year's Eve with fireworks and festivities from one hemisphere to another. IRIB English Radio congratulates the world Christians on the advent of 2025, wishing you a wonderful new year full of joy and prosperity. May peace prevails all over the world, especially for the oppressed people of Gaza.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Yemen has conducted new operations against the Zionist regime, targeting an Israeli military base with another ballistic missile. As the Yemenis continue to support the Palestinians, the Western hegemonic front continues with its attacks against the country. So instead of the U.S. and its cohorts stopping the genocide in Gaza, they try to help create another crisis, this time in Yemen.
The Israeli regime has been trying to halt Yemen's operation, which are in solidarity with Palestine, launching air aggression against Yemen, targeting several locations in the Arab country. The targets include Sana'a International Airport and its military facilities. On Thursday, at least 6 people were killed in the airstrikes, and significant damage was inflicted on the airport's infrastructure. The World Health Organization's Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus was present at the airport during the attack and reported that one of his team's members was injured. Following the Israeli airstrikes, a top UN aid official in Yemen said on Friday the attack severely hindered humanitarian operations in the north of the country.
The airport of Sana'a is a civilian infrastructure. It is the location whereby all of the international humanitarian aid workers who work in the north of the country come in and leave by. So if that airport is disabled, it will paralyze the humanitarian operations.
He also highlighted the importance of Yemen's support for the humanitarian operations, warning against their destruction.
80% of Yemen's food requirements for the north comes through Hodeidah Harbor, and I would say close to 90%, 95% of all the medical supplies. If that harbour does not operate, then we will see a dramatic and sudden decrease in the humanitarian situation in Yemen.
A spokesperson for Yemen's Ansarullah Law movement condemned the Israeli strikes, calling them a Zionist crime against all Yemeni people. On December 26, Yemen's Ansarullah Law forces launched a hypersonic missile dubbed Palestine 2, targeting Tel Aviv. The missile struck Ben Gurion Airport, causing considerable destruction. With air raid sirens sounding across central occupied territories and the airport being temporarily shut down. The missile strike resulted in the injuries of 18 people in Tel Aviv as they attempt to reach safety. The Yemeni armed forces announced that the missile successfully reached its target despite Israel's defense systems. The missile strike was part of a broader series of retaliatory actions by the Yemeni forces in response to Israeli airstrikes on Yemen, including the attacks on Sana'a International Airport and other strategic locations. Analysts have noted that Yemen's use of hypersonic missile technology has significantly altered the regional power dynamics. The Palestine 2 missile, with its advanced technology and high precision, has demonstrated Yemen's growing military capabilities. This development has led to a reassessment of Yemen's military strength and its ability to challenge regional defense systems.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of London, Kim Shetty, Yemeni activist and lawyer. Also out of London, Fahima Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator. Well, thank you both for being with us on this program. Kim, I'm going to start off with you. Right before this broadcast, we just got word that the Yemenis had just shot down another MQ Reaper drone, and actually our correspondent has said that it was the 13th Reaper drone that has been shot down since these operations started. Your thoughts on this?
Yes, good evening to you both. Basically, this proves to us beyond any reasonable doubt that Yemen has developed advanced military capabilities to the point where it is able now to shoot down any drones or flights from the U.S. regime, as it did few days ago when it shot down an F-18. You've heard about that. Although in the Western media, they tried to lie about that and say that it was by friendly fire. Nonsense. It wasn't by friendly fire. It's quite clear that it is Yemenis who have improved and advanced their air defense capabilities to the point where they are shooting down these aggressive efforts by the U.S. regime and its allies. And what the world is seeming to be turning a blind eye to, it's a very important point, that why is Yemen doing what it's doing in terms of its campaign against the Israeli regime, the Zionist regime? Well, basically because it is complying with the Genocide Convention, which imposes a duty on people, on nation states, members of the United Nations, to prevent genocide. So basically, the convention states that you do not commit genocide as a matter of principle. That is the rule number one. And that principle applies to the Zionist regime because it is committing genocide against the people of Palestine. Now, the second point of a duty imposed on other parties to prevent genocide, and that is what Yemen is doing. And it has the capacity to defend itself and also defend those who deserve and need to be defended. It is a huge shame on the rest of the countries of the world who are failing to see the importance of upholding this rule of law, because today is Yemen and Palestine, tomorrow is you.
Right, indeed. Well, Fahima, let's talk about the latest operation that I mentioned in the intro by Yemeni military forces. A spokesman for Yemeni forces, Yahya Saidi, says the Nevatim airbase was targeted by a hypersonic ballistic missile. Your perspective on how are the Yemenis able to dodge the Zionist air defense system, and your thoughts about them being so effective?
They are effective because they are the resistance. And as our guest mentioned, that they are definitely there to make sure that as long as Israel continues its daily bombardment in Gaza, then they will also continue their retaliation. And it's also been portrayed that it's the Yemenis that are intensifying and they're attacking Israel, when the only reason that Yemen is actually doing what it's doing is because of the genocide in Gaza. So we need to obviously understand, when we're looking at the propaganda and the mainstream media, how these narratives and rhetoric is being exposed. And Netanyahu has also warned that the offensive is just the beginning, sort of, you know, saying what he's been saying and doing in the rest of the region, like in Syria, Lebanon, that he will continue and he's not going to stop. So Yemen is different to Syria and Lebanon in the sense of geographically, and Yemen is much, much further and larger. And the fact that they were even able to reach as far as even Tel Aviv is telling, and it is a concern and a worrying issue. Right. And at the end of the day, it is also from the UN's perspective that they feel that there is, there needs to be de-escalation. But again, it's always kind of the lip service, but nothing is done to really de-escalate Israel's involvement to actually stop this entire region from this atrocity.
Right. Well, Kim, on Thursday, the Yemeni military was able to target and hit the Ben-Gurion airport, the main international airport inside the Zionist regime, injuring 18. From a strategic perspective, how important was that strike? And how do you think it affects the psyche of the Zionist settlers?
Well, that was a very important retaliation to the Zionist regime's aggression against the sovereign state of Yemen by attacking its airport. It's an eye for an eye. And the leaders of the Yemeni Ansarullah government have made it clear that if they, normally they don't target any civilian infrastructure. However, if the Zionist aggressive criminal regime decides to attack civilian infrastructure, then a like for like. So they attacked the airport, Sana'a airport, which is the only lifeline for the people of Yemen. Majority of the people of Yemen are internally displaced people who are sheltering under the umbrella of the Ansarullah government, because that's the safest area to be in. And therefore, these people need to have access to the international community by way of food supply and other things. In fact, that target of the Sana'a airport resulted in the injuring of UN personnel, coincidentally. Coincidentally, the WHO organization's leader was there at the time, and his plane was affected by this. They are shameless. They have been killing UN personnel left, right, and center without any hesitation. And up till now, no one has stood up to them and told them, stop this nonsense. And therefore, there is no option but to carry on doing what they're doing. So an eye for an eye is right. They attacked the Sana'a airport, and the Sana'a government responded directly and immediately by attacking their own government. The psychology of this is that these guys have unbelievable fear of dying. I mean, no, there are no peoples of the world comparable to the people of that Zionist regime, a concoction of a whole sorts of people brought from all over the world to steal the land of Palestine. They have fear of dying. They have fear of inconvenience. And this is a message, clear message to them, that if they overstep the boundaries of respecting civilian infrastructure, then their own civilian infrastructures will be a direct hit for in retaliation, an eye for an eye. I'm sure that's a language and a law, divine law, that they will understand very well. What makes Yemen particularly successful in their mission is that it is disgraceful what's happening in the world, that this genocide in Gaza continuing shamelessly. Every day we hear about enormous suffering, and they're carrying on doing it without blinking an eye, and no one is stopping them. God, above all of this, who is supporting the people of Yemen achieve their objectives and successfully.
Well, Fahima, the U.S., U.K., and the Zionist regime continue to target various sites inside of Yemen. I mean, this is despite the fact that Yemen has said many times that they would stop their operations if the Zionist regime and the U.S. would stop the genocide in Gaza. So what are they trying to accomplish exactly by continuing these attacks? Because the Yemenis have said that they will not stop until the genocide stops.
Well, Israel does have a greater plan, and we know this for many, many months, if not years. And they are clearly succeeding in doing that, especially after Lebanon and now into Syria. with also, you know, backing from these factions and different rebel groups that they are now in alliance with. So we do see that. But we remember that Yemen is located along the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, a critical choke point for global shipping and energy supplies. And this waterway connects the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden and the Indian Ocean. So the Israeli naval concerns are there because they do rely on the Red Sea for trade routes and the fears of potential disruptions, which has actually happened since the beginning of the actual genocide in Gaza at the very beginning, and it did disrupt a lot. So this controlling and of influencing security in the Red Sea is essential, and strategically they need that for trade and energy supplies. And you know, Israel is suffering economically. They are definitely having to have less investors due to this. So there is also an economical reasoning behind it. They try to secure their north for the people to return, and that hasn't been successful when they went straight into Lebanon for that particular reason. So they have failed in Gaza with Hamas. They have failed in Lebanon really with Hezbollah. Now they are moving into Syria, and to a certain extent, they haven't actually demolished what they said, which was the actual, you know, the groups that they are against, like Hamas, as well as the fact that they haven't secured the hostages for themselves. So they are just continuing on a, you know, rampage, which again, which has the support of the US. So unfortunately, we will wait and see when the inauguration on the 20th of January happens with Trump. And that could be a turning point, but whatever there is a decision to be made will always be in line with the Israeli benefit. And it will be where they will, especially looking at the administration for the US, which is very highly, heavily Israeli lobby groups. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, there is so much collateral damage. But even in Yemen, we have people on the streets, regardless of how poor they are and how much they have so much humanitarian crisis, regardless of what's happening right now, they are still pouring on the streets with solidarity continuously for the Palestinians, which shows right. The support of this continuous sort of, you know, Houthi sort of, you know, attacks against
yeah,
Israel.
Yeah, stay with me on that because I do want to talk about that a little bit later in the program. But Kim, do you think that it has become more obvious for those who perhaps did not know in the past the level of collusion by the American regime and its cohorts in the genocide in Gaza and with the attacks against any forces which try to help the Palestinians, like the Yemenis?
Yes, I hope so. I mean, I'm sure they know, but they pretend, they turn a blind eye because they have their own personal vested interests, like, for example, our own neighbors, the ones who have concocted that coalition that pounded Yemen to smithereens for a period of not less than 9 years, resulting in millions of deaths and horrific humanitarian crisis. And they are the next target, whether they want to pretend that it's not happening or not, because Syria shows us clearly that this Zionist regime, this evil criminal regime, all it wants is expansion. It wants more land. It has this biblical delusion about messianic delusions about their right and entitlement to control the world, that they are the preferred people. They are extremely racist and supremacist and hateful of all other peoples. They regard other humans as animals to control. And therefore, it is necessary to stop them and contain them and stand up to them. Lo and behold, you will see time and again this is repeating itself elsewhere. That is why Yemen has no option but to resist. Resistance is the only option, and that's why Yemen is continuing and will continue. And in terms of it being attacked, it has plenty of experience of dealing with this for the past 9 years, with the its economic situation continuing to be dire, with the humanitarian situation continuing to be dire. They have nothing to lose. They will continue to do this to prevent this evil regime from expanding into our region, because next Syria, next Jordan, next West Bank, that is exactly what is in plan. People need to be very careful. Those rulers of our neighbors, they are under the misapprehension that by protecting their thrones, they're not going to be attacked later on in time. They are so grossly mistaken about this misapprehension, and they will pay a heavy price for it. I'm pretty confident about that.
Okay. Well, Fahime, the UN says the hits on Yemen is causing food insecurity. What is the goal of the US-UK, the Zionist regime, while trying to hit the food sources of the Yemenis? I mean, is their goal to use starvation as a tool of war again, as they're doing in Gaza?
Well, like you mentioned, there's no surprise if they're doing that in Gaza, and they're obviously using psychological warfare as an actual tool as well, then definitely that is something that they will do again in Yemen. And they know that they are already a very poor nation, so they will try and get even its people to have much more suffering, to maybe even try to oppose its own sort of government systems and whatever there is there. So that is quite normal. But again, we're forgetting that there is also the normalization with the Israel and Arab states, which is also the ties like the UAE and Bahrain under the Abraham Accords, which has strengthened the alignment of the Gulf. It's not just the US. And again, it's also the same nations that are opposed to Iran and the Houthi influence. And that is also a shared threat perception, where, again, it needs to have a destabilizing force for the proxies that they say is, you know, Iran-backed, like the Houthis. So as much as we try to only blame one side, and they are a huge ally, the US to the Israelis, but there is also the countries that are in the Middle East that are also taking a huge part and campaign on a larger scale to actually support and give the Israelis the operations fit to its broader campaign between the wars. So that is something that we have to constantly also call out, and the pressure to actually see that, you know, this is a political sort of security for Israel as well, to also use decisive military action to bolster domestic support and showcase strong defense policies. So they need to constantly have that kind of authority backing, as well as showcase, like you said, it to show their region that they are actually winning. Because even in Israel, you have got protests daily against the Netanyahu government. Half of the actual Israeli population do not support Netanyahu. But again, it is something that we cannot see as much, because they have very strict sort of, you know, journalist outpour, whether it's outside, you know, Israel or Israel itself. But we can see definitely from the eyewitnesses that have come back and have reported that Netanyahu is just pulling for time for as long as he can. And with Trump coming in, he's going to have maybe 4 years or less to actually play out his campaign to control and take over majority of the region that he has planned, even in the UN, when he mentioned a map and showed without several countries existing now.
Hmm. Well, Kim, I'm going to pose this question to you, since you are Yemeni. I mean, Yemenis are saying that it is their religious and moral duty to continue to support the Palestinians no matter the cost. What are your thoughts about the level of self-sacrifice of the Yemenis? And what is it about the Yemenis that make them different from most other Arab and Muslim countries? When I asked Press TV's correspondent in Sana'a about the reaction of the Yemeni people regarding the added pressure that is being exerted against them due to their support for the Palestinian people, he said this, that the people that he's talked to overall, he said, they said that they would rather sleep with an empty stomach than going to sleep knowing that a genocide is taking place and they have done nothing. Your thoughts?
Yes, it's a matter of honor. It's a matter of Arabic, Islamic honor, because you see your brother being butchered to death next to you. You don't stand by and do nothing. As far as Yemeni culture and ethics is concerned, we were all brought up to understand the importance of supporting the Palestinian cause from the time before I was born. This is normal. And the fact is that even the southern parts of Yemen, which are not under the control of the Sana'a government, a majority of the people there also support the government of Sana'a, but they are unable to publicly do so because of the problems of terrorism, extermination by means of assassination. You've seen, I'm sure, the program that was broadcast by BBC, by Nawal Maqafi, revealing the extent of UAE-funded terrorists exterminating and assassinating people left, right, and center in southern parts. But the fact is, whether you are southern or northern, this is a Yemeni thing. It's an ethical thing. It's an Islamic duty to assist your brother who is being exposed to this kind of torture and murder, and not stand by and do nothing. It's a matter of honor. It's a matter of basic principle, basic ethics, and that's why you see them in their millions, hungry or not hungry, destitute or not destitute. They will come out and show their support. They have never changed that. Throughout our lives, we have been taught that we will never give up the cause of the Palestinian people, and that's what we know, and that's all we know in this life, and that's every Yemeni's in its DNA to support the cause of the Palestinians, no matter what they do as far as economic tightening of the situation in Yemen is concerned. They have illegally moved the central bank into Aden, and that is a breach of international law. They have been illegally preventing food from going to the northern parts. That's, again, breach of international law. The starving of people is nothing new to them. They've done it in India. They've done it in Ireland. They've done it in Bangladesh. They do it everywhere. But that is not going to change because God is going to provide for them. And what we need to do is this, though. We need to now to up the game in terms of bringing more proceedings worldwide, not only at the at the ICJ level. You need to bring the aiders and abettors of the genocide and the deniers of the genocide. I'm speaking about those countries that are aiding and abetting the Zionist regime in committing this genocide against the people of Palestine, and also anyone who cooperates with them, including media personnel who cover up this genocide.
And I can tell you, all respect for the Yemeni resistance, definitely. Thank you both for being with us. Kim Sharif, Yemeni activist and lawyer out of London, Fahime Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator out of London also. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, with me, the host of this program, Atta. I have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Brother Alavian. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about a doubt, or it's better to say a question, regarding Islamic theology or kalam, and that is a shubha, which is called the shubha of akal and ma'kul. We can translate it into the complex doubt of the eater and the eaten, or the eatable, we can say, between the eater and something which is edible or eatable. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. So what is it exactly? What is this kind of doubt?
To roughly translate it into English, we can say that the skepticism of eater and eaten.
Mm-hmm.
The eater and eaten, or akilu ma'kul skepticism, is a long-standing philosophical and theological challenge.
Yes.
That questions the notion of bodily resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
The core of this skepticism is as follows, that if a specific person consumes another human in the resurrection, will the part of the consumed return to the body of the eater, or the original body of the eaten? This is the main question here that if a person, a specific person, consumes another human, the body of another human, so then the parts of the body of that human becomes part of this body of the eater.
So how is it going to be resurrected?
Yes, yes. On the day of judgment, if both body cannot be resurrected, because now that body is part of this body.
All right.
So then if one is resurrected, then where is the justice?
Okay.
Yeah?
First of all, sorry, before getting... sorry, it is like cannibalism, eating some people eating some other people.
Yes, Christianity, it is called cannibalism.
Cannibalism, okay. Sorry, are the people going to be resurrected bodily in the other world with the same physique that they have in this world?
There are three main views, according to the Muslim scholars.